COVID-19 has many manifestations. Some people can carry the virus and spread it to others, but have no symptoms themselves. Others can have a very mild case of COVID, so mild they don't even think to test to confirm they have the illness. Others become very ill with symptoms that can include some combination of fever, chills, cough, shortness of breath, sore throat, runny nose, fatigue, muscle aches, nausea, and vomiting. And some of those with the severest symptoms have to be hospitalized. As of mid-2024, more than 7 million people worldwide who've had the severest form of COVID have died from the virus. And anyone who's been infected with SARS-CoV-2, the virus that causes COVID-19, can experience long COVID, an illness that persists for months and even years, and is accompanied by chronic conditions and disability. Living with long COVID can be especially difficult because currently there are no cures for the condition. Keeping up to date with COVID-19 vaccinations is the best available tool to prevent long COVID. Janet Golden, a professor emerita of history at Rutgers University, where she specialized in the history of healthcare, is our guest on this episode of Lifespan. Janet joins us to share her experience with long COVID.
In October of 2022, after I had been vaccinated, I had an extremely mild case of COVID. I don't even know why I tested, because I was just sneezing a bit. I never had a fever. I never got achy. And then sometime after that, and it's a little foggy for me at this point, I got an incredible migraine headache. And I've always suffered from migraines my entire life, but this was extraordinary. I had a telemedicine appointment with the neurology department at the University of Pennsylvania. And from that point on to date, the left side of my head has never felt the same as my right side. I lived in pain for over a year. I think it was 14 months as they tried different interventions. It was constant, and it was waking me up at night. I could sort of mask it with pain pills. It was still there.
You never connected it with COVID.
I did connect it with COVID, and I learned that this is a not uncommon condition. I eventually was approved for medical Botox, and I get 31 shots every 12 weeks to keep the pain under control.
Explain what medical Botox is.
Medical Botox is we'll call it a different formulation of Botox than cosmetic Botox. And it's injected in many sites around your face, your neck, behind your ears, for the purpose of blocking the pain that comes from the migraine.
I know with cosmetic Botox, people complain that you can't smile anymore, your face is a little numb. Does it feel like that with medical Botox?
No. I mean, perhaps the back of my neck looks very smooth. I don't know. But no, I can smile, I can grimace, I can wrinkle my forehead. It's not a cosmetic procedure. It's a procedure to stop the acute pain.
And that worked for you?
It worked for me.
How often do you have to go to get it? Have you ever backed off from the every 12 weeks and the pain has come back?
Yes. Because of the Medicare approval process, I went for a time while I was going through the approvals and denials, which will sound familiar to anybody who has any form of health insurance. I went too long without it and the pain did get much worse.
Severe constant migraine headache has been Janet's only symptom of long COVID.
I'm fortunate that I don't have the fatigue, the cardiac problems that people have. But I will say, talking to people who have family members, either as neurologists or in going to treatment for migraine, inpatient treatment, that this post-COVID migraine is not uncommon. It's known, and there is no known particular treatment for it, and it's not clear whether for some people it will just go away after 6 months or a year, or whether it's lifelong.
And has this been defined by doctors as part of long COVID?
I actually haven't looked that up, so I don't know how it's treated in the medical world as an official long COVID. But I know that neurologists, the neurology people that I see, are very familiar with it. And I talked to a friend when I had the problem, and she said, oh, let me talk to my brother. He's a big neurologist at another medical center. He'll know what to do. And she came back and said, well, he said they see this all the time and they just try everything. So it is a known thing post-COVID. And of course, nobody knows, will it go on for a lifetime? Will it ease up with time? Just as they're beginning to see other sequelae of long COVID.
And this really just goes to show that we still know so little about COVID. I know I had COVID in April of 2024 for the first time, and I did not have a mild case. I was deathly ill, and I fully vaccinated, and I really felt like if I hadn't been fully vaccinated, if I'd been part of the early wave of COVID back in 2020, I would have been among those people who had been hospitalized and possibly have died. That's how sick I was. And when I was well, and I didn't even connect this with COVID, I began to complain when I was with friends at restaurants that the food just didn't taste good, that the people in our town, it just seems like they're not cooking well anymore. These dishes just don't taste the same. And it literally wasn't until the last couple of months when I'd read about this terrific cheese in the newspaper and I went out to buy it and I tasted it. And again, I'm saying, what was so great about this cheese? It barely has any taste. And I suddenly realized that I have lost a good part of my sense of taste. I can taste spicy, but I can't taste sweet. I think a lot of people might not recognize the after effects of COVID.
That's right. And I want to echo something you said. I was vaccinated when I got COVID. I continue to get vaccines and I regard them as life-saving because as a senior, I know that those vaccines are keeping me out of the emergency room. They're keeping me out of the ICU. They're keeping me out of the morgue. And that's their purpose. They're not there to prevent me from getting COVID. They're to prevent me from having serious COVID and deadly COVID. And I have to say, I think that it's important to say that because sometimes people say, well, I had the vaccines and I got COVID. It's not the same as getting, say, a smallpox vaccination like I had as a child. So I'm not going to get smallpox. It had a different purpose. And for me, that worked.
Absolutely. It really just makes the disease less severe. There's no question about it. And that's been absolutely documented that if you've been vaccinated, you can avoid the hospital. I mean, that's the purpose of it. So I'm incredibly grateful. I mean, that's how sick I was. I knew how much sicker I would have been if I hadn't been fully vaccinated.
As a person who had both COVID and then the long-term effects of COVID, I have been very distressed reading people in government saying, well, we're going to only work on chronic disease, not on infectious disease, because I regard them as one and the same. I had an infectious disease, COVID, and now I have a chronic disease, constant migraine.
Janet is referring to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s pronouncement that as the new Secretary of Health and Human Services, he plans to prioritize chronic, not acute illnesses. Acute illnesses and conditions are sudden in onset and include anything from a broken bone to an asthma attack to a cold to the flu. They are also finite conditions. They can be cured either by medical treatment or, like colds, are self-limiting. A chronic disease or condition, in contrast, develops over a long period of time, such as osteoporosis or heart disease or some cancers that can be treated but not cured. Patients and their doctors often separate acute illness from chronic illness as if one has nothing to do with the other. But as Janet points out, you shouldn't separate the two.
It's the same as when people would get strep throat in the era before antibiotics, and then they would have, you know, cardiac symptoms for the rest of their lives.
Janet is talking about scarlet fever, a bacterial illness that develops in some people, usually children from 5 to 15 years old, who have strep throat. Before antibiotics, scarlet fever was common. Antibiotics made it preventable. But even today, if strep throat is left untreated, scarlet fever can develop and go on to damage the heart and kidneys. And as Janet explains, untreated scarlet fever can lead to an even more serious illness, rheumatic fever, leading to lifelong debility.
They would be told, you have rheumatic heart disease, don't get pregnant because it could kill you. You have rheumatic heart disease, you're excluded from military service.
That's Janet's point. You can't say, as Robert F. Kennedy Jr. does, that you want to prioritize fighting chronic health conditions unless you also prioritize fighting acute illness. Many acute illnesses cause chronic conditions.
There's just really disease that we have to confront in whatever, hopefully stopping the infectious disease so people don't end up with chronic diseases.
Right. You cannot separate the two. Both are equally important for government to keep track of and find treatments for and prevent. There's no question about it. Let's go back to your effects from COVID and the terrible migraines you had. When you went to the neurologist for the first time, did they immediately make the connection?
I don't know that I actually discussed it the first time I dealt with the neurologist, because it was a telemedicine appointment, as we were having during, well, still having during the shutdown. That was in the, when I had the acute beginnings of it. Afterwards, they weren't particularly interested to connect it to COVID, but they didn't ignore that either. Because when you go to a migraine clinic for your shots, everybody's in there for migraine. So they don't, the cause is not as of interest as much as getting you the treatment and making sure they've made sure that the cause is not something organic like a tumor and or something like that. I did talk to friends a little bit, not a lot. And of course, and I do have friends who have, I have at least one friend who has much more severe long COVID with the fatigue problem, and other friends who actually came to visit me to see another friend to help out with kids because she had such bad long COVID and fatigue. It was hard for her to take care of her kids for a while. So I think it's a known phenomenon. I think people are sympathetic and understanding, at least the people I know. But I think people are also concerned that maybe research funding is not sufficient for this, or maybe they're frustrated that the research that is ongoing isn't, because it is a worldwide phenomenon, but it doesn't seem to be getting any closer to effective treatments. Although I believe it has documented that people who were vaccinated had less severe forms of long COVID or were less likely to get long COVID.
Are the Botox treatments sustainable? And what I mean by that is there some point that they may not work as well, or the effects might fade? Or have you been told this really is a solution?
I think it's individual. I've been told for some people it stops working. Other people get them their entire lives. So for me, it's a way, as long as they're working, I will get them. And I hope that they continue to work, or that somehow by a miracle, the pain goes away. The underlying condition goes away. There's really no way of knowing. It's a very individual condition, migraine. Like, I only have it on the left side of my head. Some people have migraines that alternate from one side to the other. It's some people have the nausea. Some people have the sparkling effects. It's a very individual manifestation.
Are there side effects to medical Botox?
No, that's the great thing. Well, I mean, the side effect is you stop feeling the acute pain. But unlike taking the drugs treatments, which tried and failed, I don't have the, some of the drugs made me hyper. You know, I was taken on heavy duty steroids. And then I took other drugs that were normally prescribed for epilepsy that had me asleep and gave me GI symptoms. I tried at one point beta blockers. They had me like lying on the floor all the time because I couldn't stand up from low blood pressure. The Botox is not a systemic treatment. So it doesn't, it just blocks the pain. It doesn't have systemic effects.
One thing about pain is that it signals something is wrong. So is there any concern that the pain itself might be doing you some damage?
I've never had that raised with me before. I don't imagine that that's the problem here. My understanding is that migraine is caused in part by spasms in the blood vessels in your neck. So when you stop the spasms, and the underlying reason for that is not known. You can read about migraine from hundreds of years ago, and it's pretty much the same. And I think it's still pretty mysterious. No, it's not. The being free of pain is wonderful, is what I'll say.
You did mention that you get the medical Botox every 12 weeks. Doctors suggested to you, I mean, do you feel slight pain as you get close to the 12 weeks, or have doctors suggested to you that maybe you could take longer and longer times to see if maybe you don't have the migraines anymore?
I did go for a time without it, as I said, when I was dealing with some recertification by Medicare. And no, I need it every 12 weeks. And that's kind of the standard treatment because, again, you're not treating a disease. You're blocking pain and it wears off slowly. I certainly would not want to go through that experiment again, which I, in a sense, failed by having it go for a longer period of time. And I don't think I need to have them closer together either. I mean, I think this is a standard treatment that works for me after the other four treatments did not.
Explain how something like chronic migraines can affect your life. And I want you to respond to that in the way that, I mean, the effects of long COVID really affect your life. So talk about migraines a little bit as a side effect of COVID and how it limited your life when you were experiencing it.
Well, you know, it's hard. And I want to say, because I've had migraines since I was maybe 12 years old, are you asking me just about the post-COVID period or my lifetime of migraines? I was familiar with migraines. You become very light sensitive. You're in a lot of pain. You're sometimes noise sensitive. Sometimes, rarely, I would have the olfactory symptoms where I would walk around the house thinking, why do I smell onions cooking? But of course, I wasn't smelling onions cooking. It was the effect of the migraine, which other people had, as you had with the cheese example or with food examples. Somehow your whatever part of your brain does the smelling or tasting is also affected temporarily in that case. So I always had migraines, always had the pain, was always taking anti-inflammatories, you know, ibuprofen, something like that. I was taking baby aspirin as a preventative. I ended up in the hospital with ulcers from the NSAIDs, the anti-inflammatory. So this is another reason why I like Botox, because it's not going to put me in the hospital with ulcers, or I don't have to live on the Nexium to not have the ulcers. So, you know, it's just debilitating to have pain. Sometimes I couldn't get out of bed. Often I had to sort of push through and I would be drugged and teaching. It's, you know, and I will say that, you know, for me, most of my life, the migraines were hormonally related. So when I hit menopause, things got a lot better. They didn't go away entirely, but they certainly improved. The best period of my life was when I was pregnant or breastfeeding. And so I wasn't menstruating and I never had a migraine then. And that was a wonderful relief for a time, but I wasn't going to keep having children in order to avoid migraines.
Really, pain affects every part of your life. When you're feeling like you're living in a bubble of pain, there's no question that it makes every task difficult.
Yes. Having experienced chronic migraine for my life and then the post-COVID, a different sort of degree of migraine, I would say it's made me really advocate for people to understand the link between infectious and chronic disease and see the need to research both, to get the data about both. I am very lucky. I have Medicare. My treatments are paid for. I know there are people who have long COVID who, because of the vicissitudes of our Medicaid funding system or our health insurance system or the people getting laid off, they don't have access to the medical care that they need. And then they're living in pain and they're less effective as parents, workers, citizens. So I really want to be active in promoting the fact that we need access to preventive medicine. We need access to ongoing care. And that's my takeaway lesson from COVID, as well as we need more funding for medical research so we can get to the bottom of this and think about how to better prevent other conditions.
One of the scariest things is it does seem that they're beginning to realize that COVID can affect just about every bodily system. Depending on the person, depending on their health proclivities, it can affect almost every organ system. You're right. We need so much more research on this. This is a brand new illness, and we don't recognize how little we know about it yet.
Well, and we do know from viruses that they live on in you forever. People who survived that 1918 pandemic as children had three times the rate of Parkinson's as adults because it's a slow virus, as is COVID apparently. So it's not like you get COVID and then you get over COVID. You get COVID acute and then you maybe get over the acute COVID, but that COVID virus lives on in you. So I have to wonder, given that I have the brain effects with migraine, is this going to affect me in terms of dementia or other slow virus diseases as I age? I don't think we know the answer to that.
I love your example of, you know, talking about how acute illness can create chronic illness. And the classic example is a strep infection leading to scarlet fever, which leads to heart permanent heart damage. Can you think of other historical examples?
Yes, I can think of many examples. Probably the one that we don't talk about much is syphilis, which was, of course, an acute infection, and then it would maybe be dormant, in a sense, in your body for 10, 20 years, and then manifest most often as what used to be called as a mental illness, syphilitic insanity. And that at one point in our history accounted for a third of all mental hospital admissions. It was an expensive, deadly condition that manifested long after the acute phase. And I think people forget that. There are many other conditions that we could name. People, of course, who had, like I did, and probably you did, we had chickenpox. And then as adults, people got shingles, extremely painful disease, which we now fortunately have a vaccine that is largely effective in preventing it. So this happens all the time. Or we see a measles outbreak now in the Southwest. It seems to be spreading. And we read that once you've had measles, it really affects your immune system. So you become, for a long time, much more vulnerable to other conditions. So there's no off-on switch with an acute illness. In some cases, maybe yes, but not for all of them.
So that's another reason why immunizations are so important.
Absolutely. I mean, I remember growing up, my mother would take, whenever somebody in my class came down with rubella or German measles, all the moms would take the kids over to their house so girls could have it as young children and not get it when they were pregnant and give birth to blind or deaf infants. Boys were told to avoid, had to be sort of quarantined when somebody in the class had mumps because it could cause sterility. There are long-term effects of these acute diseases.
Right. And people don't recognize rubella, which is German measles, is really a mild disease for children. But the reason it's so serious is if you're pregnant and you get rubella in the first trimester, it does terrible damage to the fetus, as you said. The biggest cause of blindness for many years in the United States was being born blind because your mother had rubella during the first trimester of her pregnancy with you. And it's true. When children get mumps, again, it's not that serious a disease. But if you're an adolescent, if you're going through puberty, if you're a man, you get mumps, it can make you infertile.
And then there's the post-polio syndrome that many older people now who had polio as children before that vaccine are experiencing, with the muscle fatigue and the other problems there. I don't know what the worldwide rate or the U.S. rate of post-polio is, but I know that I know a number of people somewhat older than me who have post-polio syndrome, who cannot walk and use scooters, or who cannot walk very far, or who have constant fatigue from post-polio. So we think of that as a disease in the past or as something controlled by vaccines, but that is not always the case with diseases. They have long-term effects.
Post-polio syndrome affects about 25 to 40% of the 20 million polio survivors worldwide. So we're leaving our listeners with two takeaways. One, be sure you're up to date on your COVID vaccinations. COVID-19 is a terrible illness that can have lifelong effects. And two, long COVID is only the most recent example demonstrating that there is a direct link between acute and chronic illness. You can't separate the two. If our public health system wants to prioritize chronic illnesses and conditions, then our public health system must also prevent acute illness. Lifespan is a production of WOUB Public Media. I'm Jackie Wolf, Professor Emeritus of Social Medicine at Ohio University and the executive producer and host of Lifespan. Nathan Kane is our producer, audio engineer, and audio editor. Join us for the next episode of Lifespan when we talk with a medical malpractice defense attorney and a consulting neurologist about the effect that the electronic fetal monitor has had on the way physicians approach childbirth.